Hello and welcome to the ABCs of Rock podcast. I am your host, Nathan Schur. The ABCs of Rock is proudly part of the Weston Media Podcast Network. I thank you for joining me on my journey through the alphabet from A to Z, where each week I pick a new band or musician going in alphabetical order, no exception. It's not only been a blast, but also an education, and I'm having the time of my life. Before I begin, I must say a couple very important words about this broadcast. I do not own the rights to any of the music played on this podcast. The musicians or the music labels own the copyright. I play the music under the doctrine of fair use. I am not here as a DJ, but to offer music commentary and criticism. My goal is for you to gain a larger appreciation for the bands or the musicians played here on this podcast. And I ask for you to go out and purchase their music legally or to legally stream it. The musicians need your support, and I hope this show contributes to spreading the good word about these bands you hear on these episodes. I do not profit in any way from this podcast. It is truly done out of my pure love of the music. It's so good to be back behind the microphone this week after taking some time off. It's been an exhausting couple of months for me and the family, so I decided to turn off the computer, avoid all work emails, and spend some quality time with the family. I've alluded a few times that I live in Massachusetts, and we're quite fortunate to be only a couple hours away from the gorgeous countrysides of states like Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. Well, last week, the family and I spent part of the week up in one of my favorite parts of Vermont, right outside of Stowe, and we stayed at the Von Trapp Family Lodge, which was absolutely beautiful. Hiking trails, gorgeous mountain ranges all around us, starry night skies, and I just love the cool little restaurants and boutique shops. If you have kids, and as you know, I have a 9-year-old, but also a three-year-old, it's a great place for kids as well. So I highly endorse the Von Trapp Family Lodge. And of course, if you're a beer connoisseur, Vermont is like the microbrew capital of this country. Well, I'm fully recharged from my time up in the hills, and I'm ready to get into it with one of the most legendary bands of all time, Rush. So like I've done several times already, I have decided to only focus on a certain era of their career, specifically their 70s output, which includes their self-titled debut, Fly By Night, Caress of Steel, 2112, A Farewell to Kings, and Hemispheres. Their catalog is just too big, too deep to pick 10 songs over 19 albums. Oh, and I suppose I should quickly mention to any first-time listeners the format that we do here. Each week, I pick a new band represented by a letter in the alphabet. Last week was the letter Q, so the episode was on the Queens of the Stone Age. And this week, we move on to the next letter. In a few weeks, we're going to be moving on to the letter S. So we'll have an episode about a band that starts with the letter S. Pretty simple concept. But the catch is, I want to reintroduce these bands or musicians to the casual listener. For instance, today I'm picking 10 Rush songs, but I'm going to do my best to dig deep into these 6 albums and pick songs that were not hits. They were not singles, and hopefully not songs that are concert staples either. Actually, quite a challenge with a band like Rush, who especially during this era of their career weren't really known for hit singles. But as I was perusing the Setlist FM website, so many of these songs from these albums are just huge concert favorites. Anyways, the point being, I strive to play the underrated, the underplayed, the underappreciated tracks from these bands. The hidden gems, the forgotten treasures. I think you catch my drift. The earliest incarnation of Rush, which was formed around 1968, which included both Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson, but also included original drummer John Rutsey, who performed on their debut album, and bassist Jeff Jones. Several more members circulated through the band in the late 60s and early 70s before their debut album. But by that time, the band had been whittled down to a trio of Lee, Lifeson, and Rutsey, and in 1974, they finally released their first LP. Now, before I jump into the first song, I always give a brief synopsis of my personal relationship with bands that I'm discussing. As a child of the 80s and the MTV generation, I only had peripheral knowledge of Rush. I don't recall their music videos being anything special from that era. I do remember the video for Grace Under Pressure vaguely getting a decent amount of play. I, being a fan of pop and new wave during this time, I had no exposure to their 70s and early 80s output. Also, does anyone actually remember the music videos they made for their songs, like the ones for Tom Sawyer and Limelight? I mean, they're horrendous. I mean, it's not that they're not bad, but they're not thought through. There's no creativity put into them. So obviously, they weren't going to grab the attention of 8-year-old Nathan. So it probably wasn't until I was in high school where I started to become aware of their legacy. I got into classic rock radio and became fully aware of the greatness. Remember buying at Sam Goody, the Moving Pictures album, and Permanent Waves on cassette. I've been lucky enough to have seen Rush twice in my life. I saw them on both their 30th anniversary tour and their 40th anniversary tour. Both shows were equally epic. I think I liked the 30th maybe slightly more because I think I liked their set list probably a bit more for that one. Their last show, though, was not cheap, and I debated not attending, but in hindsight, I am eternally grateful that I did fork over the cash for it. So I suppose we should kick things off at the beginning. Rush's debut album was released on March 1st, 1974 on Moon Records. Moon Records, I read, was quickly established as the label because Rush couldn't find another label to take them on. So Moon Records is actually a company that was created by Rush's manager at the time, Ray Daniels. Their initial album is infamous for having a very different sound compared to everything else that they would put out after this. It's a lot more bluesy and derivative of bands that, like Led Zeppelin or even Deep Purple. Because this album has such a different sound, I feel it's unfortunately dismissed constantly when the discussion comes up about the best Rush albums. No, I don't think it's one of their best, but I always see it usually in the bottom half of the list, which I simply don't get. I'll be honest, I'd much rather listen to their debut than a bulk of their albums between like the mid-80s and beyond. It's loaded with some great rockers, such as the opener Finding My Way, In the Mood, and this song I'm about to play titled Take a Friend. This was written by Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson. In fact, all the tracks on their debut were penned by this duo. It wasn't until their third album, the second with Neil Peart, that Neil took over full control of writing the lyrics. The song first of all starts off with this ridiculously great intro. There's this guitar scaling riff that emerges from silence. Geddy's bass on this song is right up on near the top of the mix, which is so cool, and it's just so damn good. Alex's guitar work on this is superb and also quite unique compared to where the band would go on after this album. And of course, the lyrics are so prophetic. Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson have been friends dating back to junior high, and the message of the song is just very inspirational. If you see someone lonely that needs a friend, someone to depend on, try to be there for them. I mean, that's just a great message. Since we're on the lyrics, let's get to that. And first-time listeners of the show, what I always do here is I quote a portion of the lyrics, either a verse or a chorus from that song, usually poorly. I really like the third verse, so I'm going to go with that. Yes, you need some advice. Well, let me put it to you nice. I said you need a friend, someone who'll stick with you to the end. You Welcome back, everyone. Such a cool song. Really dig how the fade out at the end of the song bookends the fade in at the beginning. Great underrated song. Going to pick another classic song off this debut album, going with What You're Doing, written by Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson. This starts off with a quintessential power chord, and Lifeson's guitar work is singing. His solo midway through the song is another highlight of this monster hard rock track. Drummer John Rutsey even gets a mini drum solo, which honestly is pretty darn good. He's no Neil Peart, but if there is a track on this debut that showcases John's best talents, it's this one. The song is angsty and loud, and in my opinion, top to bottom, the best song represented on this album. So I hope you all enjoy this one. Here is the opening verse. Well, I see you standing there with your finger in the air. Everything we do, you want to leave it up to you. Who do you think you are? You think you are a star? Trying to run the town, always trying to put us down.
You think that you got it?
What an amazing song. Haven't had too many opportunities in recent episodes to suggest some covers, but I got one here, actually. And this is definitely a guilty pleasure, because mentioning Skid Row on a Rush episode could be considered blasphemous. But I can't deny the fact that I really dig Skid Row's cover of What You're Doing, which can be found on their 1992 B-Sides Ourselves. It's an EP that it's actually pretty good. So maybe you'd be interested in checking that out. All right, let's push on through to their sophomore album, which is Fly By Night, which was released on February 15th of 1975 on Mercury Records. Fly By Night is one of my favorite albums from this era of the band, because it maintains that rootsy original sound, but it's not quite into their proggy phase yet. But they expand in every direction sonically as well. The songs sound bigger, and on a composition level, they really step it up over their debut. Lots of album highlights on this one, including their opener, Anthem, and as well as like Beneath, Between, and Behind. Also concert favorites, Bitor and the Snow Dog, and of course the title track. The album also marks the introduction of, in my opinion, the greatest drummer of all time, Neil Peart. I know, there will always be debate surrounding that, but in my opinion, there was nobody better. So let's pick a song that demonstrates Neil's prowess, and as the newest member of the band, going to play Best I Can off this album. And this just really showcases Neil's talents. The song is loaded with his drum fills. It's just epic. No drum solo, but we do get a monster guitar solo from Alex, who is shredding on this song. Best I Can was solely written by Geddy Lee, something going forward after this album he would rarely do. And I don't think it's going too far to criticize Geddy's lyric writing. It's definitely not his strong suit. He gets by. But once Neil joined the band, everyone's roles solidified in the best way possible. Going with the opening verse for this song. I've got a living that's rough, a future that's tough. You know what I mean. Blankers and boasters, all the bluffers and posers. I'm not into that scene.
Tell me.
Neil Peart saying, "Here I am." Let's spin another off of Fly By Night, and it's a great one. Also my favorite song on the album. One of the best gauges of a great album is how good the album opener is. An anthem is fantastic, but equally as important is the album closer. And Fly By Night closes out with, I think, my favorite album closer on any Rush album, In The End. Well, it's maybe tied with another album closer. I'll be playing that shortly, actually. In The End's lyrics were written by Lee and the music written by Lee and Lifeson. This one begins with Alex's beautiful acoustic intro. It's mellow and soothing and lulls you into thinking you're going to float off into one of the more ethereal, proggy numbers to close out the album. Then it goes into a break. And I can picture Alex in mind handing off his acoustic and picking up his Gibson Les Paul and just blasting out this dynamic riff. Lee gives a terrific performance, really stretching his vocal cords into the stratosphere. Going with the third verse on this one. "Well, I can shine like you shine. It don't make me brighter. But if I think, oh, like you think, it don't make my load much lighter." And that's how you close out an album, folks. It gives me chills every time I hear that song. So good. On September 24th, 1975, they released their third album titled Caress of Steel on Mercury Records. Imagine that a mere 7 months between their second and third albums. That would just never happen today. Even though Fly By Night included their first foray into experimental multi-part compositions like Bytor and the Snow Dog, Caress of Steel marks a real cosmic shift in their sound and the style in which they would make albums for quite some time. This album is considered to be the one where they adopted the moniker of progressive rock band, especially with side two's The Fountain of Lamneth, which spans the entire side of the album. Picking a song from this album wasn't super easy because, no, I wasn't going to play a 20-minute song on this podcast. And their first three songs, Bastille Day, I Think I'm Going Bald, and Lakeside Park, are all either popular singles or were in heavy rotation on their concerts. But it's okay because that left me with a gift of a song that I absolutely adore. Going to play The Necromancer, an epic composition written by Neil Peart and broken up into three parts: Into the Darkness, Under the Shadow, and Return of the Prince. The song is styled as a short story about a familiar character, Prince Bytor, and is layered with many references to J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings, The Necromancer being another name for Sauron. It's a deep rabbit hole if you start researching all the connections to Lord of the Rings. But if you focus strictly on the music, there is so much to fall in love with on this song. Part one is haunting and surreal, almost reminds me of early Sabbath. That is, if they were ever going to sound proggy. Part two is a practically proto-thrash metal. Alex is tearing it up on this part. And part three is so uplifting and inspirational. It's the heroic finale. Of all of their long-form concept songs, The Necromancer gets such a short shrift. It's criminally underrated, and it definitely needs to be celebrated as one of their best. I do have one gripe with the song, and it's the voiceover narration. It's always sounded cheesy to me, and I wish there was a way I could digitally remove it for my own version. So quoting a lyric from the song would be like blindly dropping my finger on a random page of a novel. But I do love this part of the second part of the song, the second movement, which is Under the Shadow. And I'll read this here. Brooding in the tower, watching o'er his land, holding every creature, helplessly they stand, gaze into his prisms, knowing they are near. Lead them to the dungeons, specters numb with fear. They bow defeated.
As gray traces of dawn tinge the eastern sky, the three travelers, men of Willowdale, emerge from the forest shadow. Fording the River Dawn, they turn south, journeying into the dark and forbidding lands of the Necromancer. Even now, the intensity of his dread power can be felt, weakening the body and saddening the heart. Ultimately, they will become empty, mindless specters. Stripped of will and soul, only their thirst for freedom gives them hunger for vengeance.
Thank you. travelers ford the river and southward journey on. The road is lined with peril, the air is charged with fear, the shadow of his near weighs like iron teeth.
Invaders trapped in his lair.
Thank you.
Enter the champion. Prince Bitor appears to battle for freedom from chains of long years. The spell has been broken. The dark lands are bright. The wraith of the necromancer soars away in the night.
In case you were wondering, not the longest song I've played on the ABCs of Rock, but the second longest song. That title still belongs to the band Color Haze in the song Peace, Brother, and Sisters, which clocks in at 22 minutes and 8 seconds. That may be a record that is never broken. I played that a couple months ago on my Peace, Love, and Understanding episode, so you could check that out. All right, let's move on. Released sometime either in March or April of 1976, because nobody really knows for sure, was their fourth album, 2112, or 2112. It was produced by Rush and Terry Brown. I haven't mentioned Terry on the show yet, but he was the co-producer on the last three albums, starting with Fly By Night, and would be with the band through their 1982 release, Signals. Even though Caress of Steel was considered a commercial disappointment, and the record label was strong-arming Rush to lean into a more commercial sound, Rush doubled down on their prog rock tendencies and put out another concept album. Neil Peart has given many interviews about how this album is based loosely on Ayn Rand's Anthem, a dystopian future set in the year 2112. Commercially and critically speaking, this album was much better received, so the gamble paid off. Side A is the 20-minute epic 2112 Overture, which I will say of all of their long-form compositions is my favorite. Not gonna play that, though. I promised myself I'd limit the show to just one of those. Otherwise, this would be a 3-hour episode. So, you know how I said before how I was going to play the other album closer, which is in competition for my favorite from Rush? Well, here it is. Something for Nothing has everything I love in a Rush song. It's a timeless masterpiece. It's got gnarly guitar riffs. And Geddy Lee's vocals are some of my favorite he's ever done. And his bass line during the intro is so delicious. I think it's important to point out that around this time, I feel Neil's writing has fully hit a stride as he has taken the mantle as pretty much the sole lyric writer for the band. The lyrics for the song are just so beautiful, vivid, and poignant. He's become such a wordslinger. Love the chorus on the song, so let's go with that. You don't get something for nothing. You can't have freedom for free. You won't get wise with sleep still in your eyes, no matter what your dreams might be.
Waiting for
If I were to make a top 10 list of Rush songs, I definitely have to put that song on the list. I'm shocked that song wasn't released as a single. I think it would have been a massive hit. Instead, the two singles off 2112 were The Twilight Zone, which in my opinion is fine, but one of the weaker songs on the album, and The Temples of the Syrinx, which is one of the sections of the 2112 Overture. Odd choices if you ask me, but well, let's move on. So, as many of you know, Rush was notoriously known as the working band. They toured constantly. If they weren't in the studio recording, they were probably at a gig. So it made sense that they put out their first live album around this time, which was titled All the World's a Stage. It was a double live album and released on September 29th, 1976, and recorded over three nights in June of that year in Toronto. Obviously, I wasn't around during this era to see them live, but what an experience it must have been to see them at this stage of their career, so hungry, so motivated. The energy of these shows pours through, though, and the setlist is extraordinary. I don't usually pull from live albums on this show, usually stick to the studio albums, but when there is an opportunity to play something off a landmark album like this, I have to go for it. So I'm going to play the live version of Lakeside Park, written by Neil Peart. Alex's guitar playing is the highlight for me on this track. The lyrics are so vivid on this one. It taps into some real emotions for me. Memories of my own life growing up with family and friends, meeting up for family reunions, barbecue with friends or relatives, friends that have left my life. It's melancholy, but underneath it all, it brings up good memories. So let's get to the lyrics. Days of barefoot freedom, racing with the waves. Nights of starlit secrets, crackling driftwood flames. Drinking by the lighthouse, smoking on the pier. Still we saw the magic was fading every year.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Woo. We'd like to do something for you right now that's on Caress of Steel. This is a song that Neil wrote the lyrics for about a place not too far from where he was born. Not too far from here, as a matter of fact. It's called Lakeside Park.
Thousand camps and wonders you could ask for.
Yes, memories of my youth. Before I continue, I do want to mention that the ABCs of Rock is part of the Westin Media Podcast Network, and I can't emphasize this enough, ever, but please don't hesitate to share with me your feedback of the show. I really love hearing from listeners. There's a brand new email that I can be reached at, and it's abcofrockpodcast@gmail.com. I also can be found on Facebook at ABC of Rock Podcast and on Twitter at ABC Rock Podcast. So give it a follow or reach out to me on either of those and let me know that you're out there listening. Almost forgot, if you have a chance, please take a moment and rate and review on your preferred podcast app. It may seem insignificant, but every single rating and review adds up and helps this podcast find a larger audience. I thank you all in advance. Okay, let's get to some more rock and roll. On September 1st, 1977, they released their fifth studio album, A Farewell to Kings. This album actually marks the first time the band landed a hit single with Closer to the Heart. I talked a lot about the album closers so far in this episode, but now I'm offering up an epic album opener in the title track, A Farewell to Kings. It has this breathtaking intro and segues into one of the most beautiful and complex songs in their catalog. Complex, but also simple in its primal beauty. I love this one so much. It's sort of in two parts. And it's the second part when the song becomes kind of like an instrumental. Each instrument is thrust forward with full energy and in complete harmony with each other. Possibly my favorite 90 seconds or so of any Rush song. It's just godly, almost. Here is the chorus. Cities full of hatred, fear of lies. Within hearts in cruel, tormented eyes. Scheming demons dressed in kindly guise. Beating down the multitude and scoffing at the wise. Thank you. Love that song so much. I hope you did as well. Going to play one more from A Farewell to Kings, and it's another great one called Cinderella Man. This is technically breaking one of my rules on the ABCs of Rock, because technically it was released as the second single off this album, but I can justify it for a couple of reasons. It failed to chart at all, anywhere, including Canada or in the UK, and it's really not something you hear all too often in their shows. And thirdly, I could just completely dig the song. Cinderella Man was written by Geddy Lee. This extremely underrated song is chock full of great moments, such as Lee's best vocal performances ever, at least I think so. Alex's guitar soul just cooks. And speaking of Alex's guitar, there's something a bit unique about his guitar tone in this song and in this album in general that I just love. It's a little more scratchy than usual, and I just really, really love it. Maybe it was a different amp that he was using. Perhaps a fan out there has some knowledge about this. I'd love to hear. Going to pick this part of the song to quote, and this might be considered the first verse or the pre-chorus, but here goes. Because he was human, because he had goodness, because he was moral, they called him insane. Delusions of grandeur, visions of splendor, a manic depressive, he walks in the rain.
Because he was moral, they called him insane.
A bit of an end of an era, I feel, for Rush, as I feel they changed up their sound, again, heading into the next phase of their career. They would go on to add a lot more synthesized instrumentation into the music going forward, and you're going to hear a little bit of that on the next song. Hemispheres was released on October 29th, 1978, to much critical acclaim. The album technically features only four songs, two of which were epic arrangements. Cygnus X1, Book 2, Hemispheres, which was the sequel to the album Closer from A Farewell of the Kings, Cygnus X1, Book 1, The Voyage. I don't want to give anyone a headache here. The other being possibly their greatest musical composition ever, La Villa Stragiato. I'm not going to play either of those because, like I said, I promised myself only one long song on this show. But of those two shorter ones, the one that I think is the absolute standout is Circumstances, written by Neil Peart. And I think this is the perfect song to end the show on. I love Getty's vocals on this. When he hits those high notes, the hair on my arm just stands up. Take notice of those synthesizers that creep in. For the most part, this song maintains the sound of their last couple albums, but the remainder of the album, Getty does a lot of experimenting with Moogs and polyphonic synthesizers and Alex on a guitar synthesizer. It all works and it's all wonderful though, but definitely a shift in sound. So let's get to the song and head on out of here. And I got to go with the amazing chorus for this song. All the same, we take our chances, laughed at by time, tricked by circumstances, plus cut change, plus CS la mine chose. The more that things change, the more they stay the same. hell of a way to close things out. I'm pumped for the rest of the day. How about you? And I apologize if I butchered those lyrics at the end. I am not a wordsmith. So I sincerely appreciate every one of you staying with me on this musical journey through the early Rush catalog today, as I played 10 of my favorite songs that I feel either underrated or underappreciated. All I know is my experiences of what I hear on the radio in my neck of the woods and what I hear on satellite radio and what my network of friends talk about when they discuss their favorite Rush songs. I'm fully aware you may completely disagree with these picks, and I'm totally cool with that. Hey, it's all good. It's Rush, and I know we can at least agree on one thing, that Rush is a kick-ass band. I haven't mentioned it yet because I didn't want this episode to be a downer or necessarily a tribute to Neil Peart, but I want to acknowledge his passing, and like many of you, I am devastated, just like you guys. But I'm so thankful I got to see Rush on their last tour, and I got to see Neil do one more amazing drum solo on that 40th anniversary tour. It's forever burned into my memory. I think it's time to sign off from the ABCs of Rock. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here as your host and entertainer over the past hour. I realize that there are literally tens of thousands of podcasts out there you could be listening to, and I sincerely thank you for spending your time with me on this show. It means the world to me. And if you ever have a chance, please don't hesitate to reach out to me and let me know what you think of the show. I recently got that new email, and I can be reached at abcofrockpodcast@gmail.com. I also have a Facebook page at abcofrockpodcast and Twitter, abcrockpodcast. The ABCs of Rock is part of the Westin Media Podcast Network. Thank you again for tuning into this week's show. I'll be back next week with a new episode. Have a great week, everyone.